The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia. Visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
You know, guys, yesterday was Small Business Saturday, and I know it's a weird year to be out shopping, but one of the reasons we were so excited to team up with Rubac Fine Jewelry is because they're a local company that's been an integral part of the KC community for over 100 years. They've been around since 1908. Craig, do you remember when Rubac opened back in 1908?
Yeah, I believe I was there at the ribbon cutting ceremony. I stood outside as a wee child and really enjoyed watching this bastion of Kansas City open in 1908.
See, that's what I thought. So, but anyways, you know, like if they're as old as Craig Stout, you know, you're working with someone who will be around for years to come. As part of Small Business Saturday, everything in Rubac's cases are on sale right now. But you need to hurry and set an appointment before that offer is over. And believe me, they've got a great selection in their cases. I went and visited Hal over at Rubac, and they've got so much going on there. But that's another thing about Rubac is they're very focused on your health and safety. So they are appointment only right now. You'll have Rubac's owner, Hal's, full attention when you come in. And I know firsthand that it's a no-pressure environment. He's so accommodating. And he's not trying to push you beyond what price range you're comfortable with. I promise you, though, you're going to be surprised about how far your dollar can go with Rubac, because they're well-connected in the industry and they make their own jewelry. So set up an appointment today. See if you can take advantage of the discounts on their already well-priced pieces. You still have time before Christmas to get the right present for someone you care about. Set up your appointment before the holidays get here by going to rubac.co/appointments and experience the most comfortable, relaxed jewelry buying process you've ever seen. In the case of Tom versus Showtime, part 4, the young guy, the presumed MVP of the 2020 season, Patrick LeVon Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs, beats the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in a close one, surprisingly, 27-24. A lot to unpack in this game. Such a weird game to be breaking down, but here to help me do it are my dear pals. First, find him on Twitter, at Chief in Carolina, Maddie Lane. What a weird one.
Talk about a roller coaster of emotions here, from CBS blocking me from the entire first drive until the third down incompletion before the Chiefs had to kick a field goal, to the offense looking unstoppable, to the defense looking like they can't stop anything. And somehow the Chiefs looked like they should have scored 78 points in this game and came away with under 30, it was a roller coaster. But I think there's a lot of good and a lot of bad to take away from this game. So I think this is a good learning game. This is a good game for the Chiefs to have, to go back to the locker room, watch some film, and kind of really figure out where they are. It's not just a hard-fought game. It's a game that actually, I think, teaches them a lot about themselves. Craig, I know you were feeling this one too, ups and downs. How are you feeling now?
Well, I'm feeling like I'm going to bring it strong for the first quarter of this, and the back three quarters of this, I'm just going to mail it completely in, just like the defense did. Guys, it was so not good on that side of the ball, and yet the offense definitely held up their end, but still left plays on the field. I don't know that I have ever been able to say a team that had 550 yards of total offense left plays on the field. Kent, let me kick it to you. How do you feel about the way the offense played this week?
I mean, it's such a weird... This is how weird this game is, guys. The Chiefs, yeah, like I said, 543 yards of total offense. 462 yards. Patrick Mahomes throws 3 touchdowns. The Chiefs end the game with the number one and number two leading receivers in the National Football League because Tyreek Hill went from 752 yards in the season after a 269-yard performance, leads the National Football League with 1,021 yards, the only receiver in the National Football League currently to break 1,000 yards, and his teammate Travis Kelce's at 978. And somehow, this team only puts 27 points on the board. It's just, it's such so a weird ordeal. It's bizarre. It's, you know, it's inexplicably kicking a field goal on the 1-inch line to start the game on a 4th and inches, kicking a 19-yard field goal. It's a turnover in the red zone on a fumble late in the first half. And then a stretch of football where the Chiefs can't protect Patrick Mahomes to save their lives. And forcing a couple 3-and-outs and some really just disjointed football. What a weird offensive performance. But we got to talk, I think. We got to start with Tyreek Hill, Maddie. What an unreal performance. The first 35 minutes of this football game was some of the most fun I've had watching this team.
No, absolutely. And I think it's interesting. I think about 3 weeks ago, you kind of looked and Tyreek Hill was getting like his lowest targets per game in his since his rookie season with the Chiefs. These last few games now, he's just getting double-digit target after double-digit target. And, it was working, but it hadn't paid off big time until this week. And it was just, it was one play after another. You saw Patrick Mahomes and Tyreek Hill were dialed in on some of the long passes. They were dropping right in stride. Nobody for the Bucs, whether it was zone or man coverage, could stick with Tyreek Hill and his speed. He was making plays all over the field. And you just knew eventually the adjustment was to straight up double team Tyreek Hill, which was going to leave Travis Kelce to eat over the middle of the field. And you saw that start to happen a little bit. But then, like Kent said, all of a sudden you get Eric Fisher giving up a blindside sack with a fumble deep in the Buccaneers territory. Then you come out in the second half, you have a bad blown play that should have gone for a 90-yard touchdown. And from that moment on, the Chiefs, they kind of tucked it in and they just said, okay, we're not going to play it safe, but we're going to kind of coast. We'll still throw the ball. We'll still throw in some shot plays, but we're not going to do any of the same stuff we just did. You couldn't block to save your life if you're the Chiefs offensive line. And then you somehow get this close game, despite the fact that Patrick Mahomes was sitting on darn near 600 yards. If you add that drop from Mecole Hardman back in.
I'm not going to go too down that road yet. Before this game, we talked a lot about how if Travis Kelce had 104 yards receiving, that he would be the quickest tight end in games to 1,000 yards receiving and the first tight end ever to have 5 seasons consecutive of 1,000 yards receiving. We spent so much focus on Travis Kelce hitting the 1,000-yard mark. Little did we know, Tyreek Hill was going to go for 269 yards today and 3 touchdowns on 15 targets. I mean, just ludicrous production. He's over 1,000 yards now. He is the number one receiving wide receiver in the NFL currently as we're recording this. And the number two player in receiving yards is Travis Kelce. That is a silly amount of production. It is a silly statistical performance overall from this team. I mean, you look at the yardage this game. It's bonkers yardage. You can just chalk all this up to Patrick Mahomes' MVP season. But now all of a sudden, we got to talk about Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce in the offensive player of the year conversation, because a game like that, you can't ignore. Tyreek Hill has been absolutely phenomenal for weeks now, and like Maddie said, he's getting bulk targets. If this continues, we're going to be talking about him in that same conversation as Travis Kelce.
There's legitimate cases for both of these guys, and it's wild. And you saw early, Tampa wanted to try to do some of the things that they do. They wanted to dictate the game defensively the way that they play the game.
Whoops.
I'm just telling you, the way There's no stopping this Chiefs offense the way you play the game of football. You have to literally alter how you play at your core in order to give yourself a chance. You saw what happened late. The Bucks, they stopped trying to, you know, play physical at the line of scrimmage. Tyreek Hill was just whooping him up and down the field. Carlton Davis is going to have Tyreek Hill in his nightmares for the remainder of his career. And what did you see? They started playing a little bit more off and soft. They try to keep a lid on it. That's the only way some teams feel like they're able to do anything here. They've got to try to keep a lid on this offense. And it still really didn't matter because Mahomes went on to 462 yards passing. It was a, I mean, you can't, you, the game has to be dictated. I mean, like, teams have to dictate this game to the Chiefs. And it's just trying to keep a lid on it and try to keep everything on top of them. It's wild.
Well, and one of the ways that I think you've seen a couple teams that have had some success slowing down the Chiefs defensively right now, if you go back to the 49ers or even this Buccaneers team in the second half, which some of it was still the Chiefs issue, but you have to be able to get a pass rush with four guys. And part of that's the Chiefs' interior offensive line, even the offensive tackles today struggling. But more so, it's you have to be able to play safe off coverage with your defensive backs. You have to create a nice safety net in the shell and have athletic linebackers, freaky athletic linebackers that understand coverage responsibilities. They can fly around. You've seen some other games where teams just drop their defensive backs off deep, and if they don't have athletic linebackers, Travis Kelce eats them up over the middle of the field. Tyreek Hill gets loose after the catch. This Buccaneers team, those linebackers, the safeties were flying around making tackles on everything underneath in that second half. They weren't letting Hill get deep. Like, that's the blueprint. But like Kent said, that's not how most teams play football. You can't drop three to four guys 20 yards deep every play and then just rely on super athletes that you probably don't have enough of, like the Buccaneers could in this game, to cover the whole field. And oh, by the way, the Chiefs still should have scored like 50 if it wasn't for a few mistakes they made on their own. It's like, there is a blueprint there. It's just single digit teams in the NFL can even attempt it. And even then, you're hoping to hold the Chiefs to 27, 30 points.
Yeah, and the single digit teams that can are like what Tampa Bay. That's one of them. I mean, they drafted freak athletes at those positions for years now. You maybe have the Rams, although I don't know about their linebacker play there. The secondary has a bunch of athletes there that can collapse on stuff, especially Ramsey. But like, it's not very many teams that can do what the Bucs did. And so yeah, you saw Todd Bowles come out here and say, listen, it doesn't matter what Andy Reid's going to do. I feel like we can line up and we can just put Carlton Davis out there on an island against Tyreek Hill. I almost felt sorry for Carlton Davis. Almost for a split second, because he got no help. And nobody should ever get no help against Tyreek Hill in the entire NFL. The best corner in the league shouldn't get no help against Tyreek Hill. And he didn't. And look what happens. They dialed it up all game long early, and it ended up being the difference of the game.
You know, I mentioned it in the pregame show. I thought the Bucks would be one of the few teams that would try to play their game instead of just giving up and saying, okay, we're gonna just do what everyone else does and try to dictate the game by keeping everything in front of us. And it failed miserably for them. And also, you know, we talked about hopefully they could get the passing game going down the field. What happened? I think we had some pretty good receipts on the pregame show, because I think we talked a little bit about Tyreek Hill too. But overall, just really, you know, a lot of really positives in the passing game. It wasn't all perfect though. The offensive line, the back half of that game, and parts of the 35-minute run of offensive dominance was really bad, Matty.
Yeah, so the offensive line in the second half especially was really bad. The Buccaneers were able to rush four. They didn't even have to blitz, something they were trying to do a little bit in the first half, something they've done in the past. They just rushed four, and they were getting consistent pressure there, especially in the second half. It kind of started heating up a little bit in the second quarter. Andrew Wiley, Austin Ryder, Nick Allegretti could do nothing to slow down Ndamukong Suh up front. You even brought JPP up the middle a few times, and they were getting interior pressure. When Mahomes was able to escape on the outside, you still saw him make his patented plays outside of structure, outside the tackle box. Unfortunately, they started beating Eric Fisher and Mike Rimmers like a drum. It got so bad to the point in the fourth quarter, the Chiefs' offensive linemen were literally holding on nearly every single play, just trying to hang on. And I get it, some of the penalties were a little ticky-tack, kind of 50-50, but when you're getting beat for 60 straight minutes, those calls start to go against you. When you're barely hanging on every single play, those calls start to go against you. The Chiefs, if something is going to stop them, and we like to say theirselves, but if that theirselves is going to stop the Chiefs, it is 100% going to be this offensive line's inability to protect Patrick Mahomes for a consistent amount of time.
Yeah, it was in the second quarter. The Chiefs had rattled off a 17-0 lead. They're driving again, and you could already kind of see the pressure cropping up that drive. Mahomes was able to make, you know, something out of nothing a couple of times, and they got all the way down to the 8-yard line. A sack in the red zone there that ends up turning into a fumble that the Buccaneers recover. They're able to go all the way down the field and score a touchdown. From that point, the Chiefs adjusted. The Buccaneers tried to take away some of the deep stuff, again, like we've talked about other teams doing. The Chiefs adjusted, tried to throw quick, and then it still didn't really matter. It seemed like Mahomes was running for his life for the rest of the day. The penultimate moment of offensive line struggles was the one that Matt was talking about there, where they had a holding penalty, followed up by a roughing the passer penalty, followed up by a holding penalty, another play, and a holding penalty in there that pushed the Chiefs from field goal range, which would have made things a little bit more comfortable, back across into their own territory. Tommy Townsend had a terrible punt after that. It was just a ridiculously awful series of downs. They rattled off 6 minutes of time, which is very important in this game, but they weren't able to go ahead and put that killing blow today. And it was largely because Mahomes didn't have the time. Mahomes struggled with pressure and, you know, having to run for his life for most of the day. And then when the offensive line tried to protect him, it ended up just being penalty after penalty after penalty. It just put the Chiefs behind the sticks for most of the second half there.
I mean, even watch some of the big plays of this game. And you're going to see an offensive line that was struggling to hold up. Andrew Wiley, I believe, missed a blitz on one of the plays down the field to Tyreek Hill. Ndamukong Suh was coming on that touchdown to Tyreek Hill that Mahomes threw the ball in the air 60 yards. But, you know, whatever. Like, we're talking about an MVP. We're talking about a team that has a guy that just continued to stretch his MVP case. And, like, there's so many other storylines to talk about it right now. Sorry, it's wild. I mean, like, I don't want to diminish what just happened with Mahomes going 462, and we're just like, whatever, you know.
But we, like, should touch on that.
No, it's ludicrous.
That might be one of the best games I've seen Patrick Mahomes play. Like, I think that when people go back and rewatch this, like, national people that only follow the Chiefs, like, I think this might be one of the best games Patrick Mahomes has ever played. The stats already look ludicrous. They could look even better. And then you look at some of the stuff he was dealing with in the second half, how he was able to ice the game, how he was still able to be productive with as bad as the protection was for a lot of the game. Some of those passes downfield were thrown perfectly on the money. He was throwing some darts from some weird arm angles in the middle of the game. Like, this might be one of the best games he has played start to finish. And there was even stuff that was left on the board that might not have been entirely in his control.
Real quick, from Patrick Mahomes, at Patrick Mahomes. I'm surprised he doesn't have at GOAT locked up yet. He said, bro, how did I miss Mecole Hardman? So, you know, Patrick's taking some blame off of Mecole. That's leadership.
Always a little bit behind.
He always does.
Yeah, he always does. No, it's great. And I'm just gonna go on. That's leadership. I love that. You know, he defended and kind of helped DeMarcus Robinson out a little bit last week with the miscommunication. That's leadership. Not to say it was a perfect ball, because it definitely was not a perfect ball. It was a catchable ball. Mecole Hardman definitely should have caught it. But I love that leadership from Patrick LeVon Mahomes.
With today's performance, Patrick Mahomes' 16-game projection is now over 5,000 yards.
Huh.
Yet again. Now, granted, it took a 462-yard performance. Don't get me wrong. Like, that was great. But, I mean, that's a season-long projection through 11 games with 44 touchdowns to 2 interceptions. Ludicrous, ludicrous numbers for Mahomes.
It's bonkers. Best player in the world. And, I mean, somehow what he's doing is slightly overshadowed by so much else that's going on in this game. Never take Patrick LeVon Mahomes for granted, ever.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Let's talk about the defense. There was some bright spots early in the game. Let's just start there. Maybe just let's talk about what went right early, Craig. Let's just go there.
Hey, what went right early? When we got into this, I believe I even said on the preview, I projected this to be a loss because I didn't think that the Chiefs would protect Patrick Mahomes well enough, and I didn't think they'd rush the passer on Tom Brady well enough. For 3 quarters, that was true, but that first quarter was really good from both of those things there. The Chiefs blitzed on all but one pass that Tom Brady threw through the first 3 drives. They brought the heat, they knocked Tom Brady off of his game, and they built up this 17-point lead. They got off the field regularly early. Even after that, when they were rushing 4 and they were sitting back in a dime shell, early dime shell, they had a lot of down or a lot of situations where they got off the field. Brady was flustered, and then they started dialing things up. They started attacking the Chiefs linebackers and safeties in the middle of the field with Gronkowski. They started getting the matchups they wanted, and the Chiefs just kept rushing 4 with limited blitzes after that, and the pass rush suffered. It was not good today. It was actively bad yet again today. This is now a persistent problem. We are weeks and weeks and weeks into the pass rush being an issue here. It's realistically been a streak with Chris Jones earlier this year where he was playing out of his mind since the pass rush has been good. And it was really just Chris Jones during that time period. Taco Charlton chipped in. Frank Clark would chip in occasionally. But it was realistically that period with Chris Jones. It has been bad for the last several weeks now, unless Steve Spagnuolo is dialing up some of those pressures, dialing up some of those early looks that we saw. Anthony Hitchens, Charvarius Ward had a good blitz that Tom Brady was able to dial up a great deep ball on, but it was a good blitz. But the 4-man rush just can't seem to beat much of anybody right now. And it is a major problem for what Steve Spagnuolo wants to do on the back end.
It's like the good, like Craig said, was the blitzing early on clearly got to Tom Brady. And that's something you used to never do to Brady when he was in New England. You did not blitz him. Now, as the game went on, Tom did kind of start to ID some of these things, and you saw him take advantage. He hit Gronk down the middle of the field when he knew it was going to be a defensive end covering him. He started to call out some of these hot reads. There was some miscommunications with wide receivers that helped the Chiefs out early, but bringing the early pressure was good. But as soon as the Chiefs quit blitzing, the pressure went completely away. I mean, Frank Clark didn't do anything until he got penalties late in the game. Chris Jones, his highlight of the entire game was talking trash to Tom Brady, even though he didn't get near him on the play. Like, those two guys take up so much of the Chiefs cap space right now, and neither one of them have been effective at rushing the passer just in a vacuum for almost a month now. I understand that sometimes Frank Clark, sometimes more times Chris Jones gets extra attention, but that's the position you play. If you're going to be the team's best defensive end, you're going to get chipped a lot. If you're going to be a pass rushing 3-tech, you're going to get help from a center. You're going to get extra guys thrown at you. That's not new. That's not brand new. That didn't all of a sudden start happening. These two guys just aren't playing up to their standards the way they started this year, the way they finished last year, and it's really hurting the Chiefs right now. If you have to keep blitzing to get pressure, that's fine. The Chiefs are very good at it. But at some point in time, you have to find a way to get some pressure, just in situations rushing four. There was a couple good reps where the Chiefs did keep pretty good rush lanes. I do think the Chiefs rushed together pretty well in this game. Tom Brady's not a guy that escapes a lot, but they did a good job making sure they forced him to step up. They had somebody playing for him to slide, and then they were trying to push the pocket. There was a calculated effort to work together. It just didn't give too many dividends because your two stars could not win their one-on-ones at any point in time in this game.
We're kind of past the point, I think, where we have questions about this football team. This is who they are.
Mm-hmm.
This team has an expensive defensive line that can't rush the passer. This team has an offensive line that can't consistently protect the quarterback. And it may not matter because the Chiefs have the best player in the world. I'm not trying to convert it all back or revert it all back to Patrick Mahomes, but like that's the prevailing thought I have. I'm thinking about all this stuff.
No, yes, you are, and that's okay. You're the offensive guy. It's fine.
I just, you know, like that's just the thing that keeps coming up in my head is like this team has problems, and like that's the like I think that's the thing about just covering this football team in general.
And every team has problems. Every team has problems. This is still the best team in the NFL. Don't get me wrong. There are some potentially fatal flaws in this team.
That's the word I was literally about to come after, is fatal flaws. This team has fatal flaws. Make no mistake about it. But they also have the best player in the world who's uniquely capable of masking literally all these deficiencies that would be bigger problems with lesser quarterbacks under center. Like, honestly, what Mahomes is doing to carry this football team in some ways is wildly impressive. They should probably have more than one loss, frankly. Mm-hmm. But Patrick Mahomes is their quarterback. And that's a big thing. Let's talk about the safety position. Another weakness that we're seeing right now, which is a surprise, since if you had told me that 12 months ago, I would consider, or we would all consider, the safety position to be a weakness on this football team, I would not believe you in the slightest.
Absolutely baffling. I think that was a position that when we were doing our positional breakdowns during the offseason that we said arguably was the strongest on this team outside of maybe wide receiver. And it's frankly underperformed all year long. Tyrann Mathieu is not the same player that he was last year. I think that he was a little bit better today. He had a couple plays where he came up and he wanted to make a hit, but you did see a couple of times with Gronk out in the flat where he seems to be slapping at the ball. Like, you know, he doesn't want to throw himself whole hog into some of those tackles, which is a thing that's going to happen. And I think that we're seeing some of the reasons why Juan Thornhill isn't on the field more. Now, we talked about how he started the season slow. I felt like he got better, and then he kind of fell off a cliff a little bit. I don't know if he's trying to do a little too much, if he's trying to take some angles that he's just frankly not capable of taking right now with the limited athletic ability coming back from that injury. I don't know what it really is, but you're seeing a lot of times that Thornhill's either overcommitting to some things, or he's just in the wrong spot in some of his zone looks, or he's just not coming downhill the same way. He's not filling the alley the way that he was his rookie year, the things that we got really excited about. And then obviously the ball production on the back end, he's not able to top some of these routes. He's not able to get to the sideline, take away some of these things, and come down with these picks. It's been a problem this year. We know what Dan Sorensen is. Dan Sorensen is the player that he is and will always be. And the fact that right now he's the one that's making more impact plays than Tyrann or Juan Thornhill. Now, granted, Tyrann is a better baseline overall player than Dan Sorensen is, but we saw lots of impact plays from those three last year, and Dan is the guy that's coming up with a lot of these impact plays. And yes, I realize that Tyrann had an interception today off of a Dan Sorensen helmet bonk at the line of scrimmage there, but it wasn't anything that Dan did. But I do think that we're just seeing an overall big step back in the safety position group this year, and it's starting to get picked on a little bit by some of these quarterbacks that are coming after him.
Hey, Tyrann Mathieu also had the pressure that led to the other interception.
That's true.
So,
that's true.
big game Matthew this week. But so the Juan Thornhill thing, I know that's a big talking point for all of Chiefs Twitter, this, us included right now. I mean, Chiefs fans around the world are confused on why this guy who was so promising last year is not playing. Go look at some of Ronald Jones' long runs. If there is a specific one in there where Juan Thornhill is the deep safety, Ronald Jones gets almost 10 yards downfield before Juan Thornhill is committing any direction whatsoever. And sometimes the way that you want to coach a deep safety to fill against the run is going to be a little bit more passive. I don't think that's what the Chiefs want. I think that's part of the issue. You can go back and look through some of these long runs the Chiefs have given up all year. I think Craig kind of nailed it. You're going to see some over-aggressive run angles from Juan Thornhill. But even more than that, I think you're going to see him, especially when playing deep, he stays way too deep and doesn't fit the run in the alley. So that way you give the running back more space to make you miss, to get away from you. And it keeps happening over and over again. On top of that, when I see Juan Thornhill run, I don't think he has the same burst he had last year still. I do still think on this run play I'm talking about, Tyrann Mathieu looked like he was outrunning him pretty easily, and that's not the case if you go back to last year. I think Juan Thornhill's still recovering a little bit, but more so, he just seems to be questioning his run fits a little bit from deep. Maybe he's not seeing the field super cleanly this year. I'm not sure. I think that's why he's off the field. Dan Sorensen's always going to be a liability in coverage. It's just who he is as a player. He plays hard. He's opportunistic. He will make big plays when they're presented, but he's not a game-changing player. The Chiefs right now are weak up the middle. What they were good at last year with the safeties covering a lot of holes from the corners or from the linebackers this year, they're not doing that. They're not covering anybody else, and they're not making plays on their own. You pair that with the pass rush struggling when you're not blitzing. This defense that was good last year down the stretch that helped you win a Super Bowl, they are playing the polar opposite, and you're relying on your cornerback play right now to make stuff happen, which is a scary thought because one week you get the two interception game like this with Bashaud Breeland and Charvarius Ward playing relatively well. Other weeks you get the Raiders game where you give up nearly 40 points because they are not simply the most talented corners in the league. The Chiefs are playing with fire as long as the safeties and pass rush play like this.
I do want to say before we get out of here, I felt like the corners played actually pretty well today. I know that people are gonna jump a little bit on Charvarius Ward for that late touchdown, but I feel like the corners, even though like what Maddie was saying there, they haven't poured assets into those corners, but I feel like today they looked pretty good.
Legarius is good, and he's the best cover corner on this football team. The Charvarius Ward touchdown, yeah, he thought he was getting help over the top. He still got beat like a drum. Like, don't just completely excuse him because Armani Watts wasn't over the top there. It was still real bad. If your butt's out as a corner, that means you got the brakes beat off you off the line of scrimmage. And he was holding on for dear life. One thing on Juan Thornhill that I just wanted to think about, want everybody to think about. Some of his angles to the football, to the ball carrier, are really bad. And that would be indicative of a guy that thinks he has more juice than he does right now. Mm-hmm. If you're taking those kind of angles and your belief is that you can get there with the angle you're taking, you're having to alter and adjust. One of the Ronald Jones runs, he took a really bad angle. That's a guy that's probably not the same athlete he was a year ago. And hopefully, you know, next year we get back and he's the same dude, because I mean, he was pacing to become really an exceptional safety. Like, we thought the Chiefs might have the best safety duo in the National Football League at one point.
Well, I hope he doesn't go the Malik Hooker route, because I mean, I think besides injuries, that is the one thing. Now, this was evident, I think, with Hooker in college that wasn't with Thornhill, just because he didn't play quite the same position. But Malik Hooker simply never figured out how to take angles to anything underneath. If you had him working backwards, if you had him playing in coverage, he figured it out. But he took the worst run angles and was late to fill everything when playing deep that was a run play. Juan Thornhill's play right now is reminding me a lot of that. And then when you combine that with teams just not giving him a chance to showcase his ability to attack the ball in the air deep down the middle of the field, you're not getting a lot from him on the field if teams aren't going to press him in the passing game and are instead going to force him to play the run.
All right, final thoughts, boys. Craig, kick us off.
Quarter two for the Chiefs. Worst defensive success rate since week five, quarter one last year. Just an absolutely abysmal performance after a great start. We didn't really touch on it too much, but Frank Clark, the dumb penalties. The first one I can kind of understand. The second one, he just comes up and jabs Tom Brady straight in the face mask. That's unacceptable. Like, those are the types of undisciplined penalties that you cannot have. I know that they're trying to set the tone. You can't do that. But again, it doesn't really matter. You're witnessing greatness. Patrick Mahomes is the truth. And I'm going to leave it with this Tyreek Hill quote that he had after the game, saying, quote, "Obviously, I'm a return specialist, so I'm going to see a lot of single coverage." Whew. Man is still out here throwing shade, even after a great performance. I love it.
For me, the final thoughts of it, if Tyreek Hill is going to play like this, and he's been this good all year, just the Chiefs were finally in a position to where they could really showcase that. If he's going to play like this and Travis Kelce is going to play like he has all season long, this Chiefs offense is utterly unstoppable as long as Andy Reid lets them loose. I do think in the second half, you got a little bit of the dialed back Andy Reid offense. I think he thought this game was more in the bag than it was. And I do think, yes, there was the misplay to Hardman and bad offensive line play, but Andy Reid definitely started coasting. Maybe he didn't take his foot off the gas, but he was trying to coast the second half. This offense can put up points better than any team in the NFL, better than any team in the NFL can stop you from putting up points. That's why they're the Super Bowl favorite, and they will be until they lose a football game.
I genuinely think the ceiling for this offense is better than either of the last 2 years. I think this group continues to get more and more terrifying. I think you saw spurts of just how unbelievable this group can be. So there's just, they're terrifying. They're bonkers. And I do genuinely think the ceiling for this team is the best we've ever seen. And that's saying a lot because this team's been really good the last couple years offensively. One final quote from Travis Kelce responding to Patrick Mahomes talking about Mecole Hardman. "How did I miss you in the end zone?" Shaking my head. Oh, well, a lot of, you know, Chiefs get a dub. Travis Kelce, second in the National Football League in receiving, only behind his teammate Tyreek Hill. What a game. What a great way to move on to 10-1. That is going to do it for the AP Laboratory post-game show. Thank you guys so much for listening. We'll be back later in the week with the mailbag. We'll catch you later.